VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. In his first comment since the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman called the killing a heinous crime that cannot be justified. Speaking at an investment conference in Riyadh Wednesday, the Crown Prince called the accident painful. He said the kingdom is undertaking all legal measures to investigate and is cooperating with Turkish authorities to punish those responsible, vowing that justice would prevail. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, President Donald Trump said the Crown Prince, the de facto Saudi ruler, bears ultimate responsibility for the operation that led to Khashoggi's death. The Crown Prince has denied any knowledge of the murder. Dozens of officials and business executives boycotted the Riyadh conference in protest. But some investors are focused on the long-term relationship with Saudi Arabia, including Christos Mourafatsos, president of the U.S.-based Blue Sky Capital.
Our relationship with the United States and Saudi Arabia goes back decades. We have strategic interests, we have economic interests, and we're complete allies. It's a testament to the United States that that doesn't tarnish overnight. And it's a testament to our president that shows his judgment and understands the value of a partnership and what an ally means.
Several Western countries have questioned the changing Saudi account of how Khashoggi died. Turkey said its investigation showed he was tortured, murdered, and his body dismembered. Clan violence has reportedly taken dozens of lives in the last 2 days in the breakaway Somali region of Somaliland. Fighting erupted Tuesday and spilled over into Wednesday. The fighting centers around the area of Dume, controlled by Somaliland but claimed by Puntland. The Puntland Interior Minister is quoted as saying the clan militia are armed with heavy weapons and he appealed for a ceasefire. This is VOA News. A day after talks with U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, Russia's President Vladimir Putin said his country would be forced to target any European nation that agrees to host U.S. nuclear missiles. Bolton informed the Russian leader of the U.S. intention of withdrawing from the 1987 Intermediate Nuclear Forces, or INF, treaty over Russian violations, a charge the Kremlin has denied. Mr. Putin said if all such treaties are dismissed, there would be no restrictions left and the situation would become very dangerous. He said he hoped to discuss the matter with President Donald Trump on the sidelines of next month's centennial observance of the end of World War I in Paris. Japanese freelance journalist Junpei Yasuda is returning to Japan after being released by his abductors in Syria after 3 years in captivity. Aboard an airplane on his way home, he said he's happy to go back to Japan. He said he hasn't spoken Japanese in 40 months. Yasuda walked into an immigration office in southern Turkey on Tuesday. The circumstances surrounding his release are unclear. A senior Japanese government spokesman said Qatar and Turkey negotiated his freedom. Yemeni officials Wednesday said the Saudi-led coalition has sent in reinforcements ahead of yet another offensive on the Houthi rebel-held port city of Hodeidah. It's a lifeline for international aid deliveries. Meanwhile, medical workers and residents said several people were killed when an airstrike hit a factory south of that city. U.S. stocks fell sharply Wednesday, with the benchmark Dow Jones Index shedding more than 600 points to close at 24,583, wiping out this year's gains. Peter Morrissey is a University of Maryland economist.
This quarter, profits are up great, and the quarterly reports would indicate stocks should continue to rise. But there's concern that after this quarter, you know, profits will only grow at single-digit rates, which is perfectly reasonable. The Fed hasn't managed expectations very effectively about interest rates. And Donald Trump's comments about the Fed, while probably correct, you know, are not helpful. There's a general sense that amateurs are in charge of the Fed.
Sales of new U.S. single-family homes also fell to a two-year low in September. At a campaign rally Wednesday in Wisconsin, President Donald Trump commented on the discovery of several suspected package bombs sent to Democratic officials, including former President Obama and the cable news network CNN.
The federal government is conducting an aggressive investigation, and we will find those responsible, and we will bring them to justice, hopefully very quickly.
None of the packages detonated. There were no casualties, no claim, and no motive yet. In North American professional baseball, the Boston Red Sox won Game 2 of the World Series against Los Angeles Dodgers 4-2. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian President George Weah promises free tuition for undergraduate students at all public universities in the country.
The increasing cost of education in Liberia, leading to non-enrollment, non-attendance, and frequent dropouts, is becoming counterproductive to our development goals.
But the Secretary General of the largest student-based party at the University of Liberia says the problem is the lack of quality education. Nigeria's EFCC explains why it did not attend a court hearing on corruption allegations against the chair of the ruling APC. And Burundi's government boycotts today's round of peace talks in Arusha, Tanzania.
As long as the government of Burundi is not in the dialogue, there's no reason for us to be there. So discussing or going to dialogue without the government of Burundi is not really a good idea for us.
Nancy Ninette Mutoni is the spokesperson of Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party. Cameroonians in the diaspora react to President Paul Biya's election victory, and a group of Malawian activists want a court injunction to stop the construction of a statue in honor of Mahatma Gandhi. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President George Weah has announced free tuition for all undergraduate students at the University of Liberia and all other public universities in the country. Speaking Thursday on the campus of the University of Liberia, Mr. Weah said the increasing cost of education in Liberia has led to non-enrollment, non-attendance, and frequent dropouts, which he said was becoming counterproductive to his government's pro-poor development agenda. The president noted that out of 12,000 students attending the university, only 5,000 were receiving some form of financial aid or scholarship. The rest, he said, did not attend due to lack of financial means.
It should be clear to all that we will never be successful in achieving the goals of our pro-poor agenda if we do not place more emphasis on the development of our human capital. In so doing, we have to invest in quality education. As the late Kofi Annan once said, and I quote, knowledge is power, information is liberating, education is the premise of progress in every society and in every family, unquote. The increasing cost of education in Liberia, leading to non-enrollment, non-attendance, and frequent dropouts, is becoming counterproductive to our development goals. I believe, therefore, that the time has come to take the bold initiatives and make direct social interventions to address this problem. There is a definite link between a well-educated citizenry and economic growth. And in recognition of that, my government has decided to invest in our human capital in order to achieve sustained economic growth. Having a good education is important to one's success in life. Education is the key to success because it enables a person to think logically. I therefore George Mane of the Crown Bakutabe Wea. And in the name of the Liberian people and our government, I therefore declare free tuition.
That was Liberian President George Weah speaking Thursday on the campus of the University of Liberia. An official of the largest student-based party at the University of Liberia says the problem of university education in Liberia is a lack of quality. Martin Colley, Secretary General of the Student Unification Party at the University of Liberia, was reacting to President George Weah's announcement Wednesday of free tuition for undergraduate students at all public universities in the country. Colley said while the student body welcomes the president's free tuition announcement, the University of Liberia, the second oldest in West Africa, is the least in the region due to poor infrastructure and the lack of internet connectivity.
Though we want to commend the president for thinking in such direction, the question is a tuition-free education at the University of Liberia an urgent priority? The answer is no. The issue at the university is far beyond just making education free. We need quality at the university. Let me inform you, Mr. Botti, that the University of Liberia is the second ODS in West Africa, but the least in the region because of access to quality of education at the university. Up to date, Mr. Botti, 19,000 students do not have access to internet connectivity. You go to the library, we are still using archaic books. So the question is, where does the president take the money from to fund the education of 19,000 students? Though we commend his thought, his intent to transform the university, but I think the government needs to focus more on quality. Because education is qualitative and not quantitative. And this is very dangerous because the president is raising the expectation of the population instead of focusing on the real issues.
But, Mr. Colley, according to what the president said, about 5,000 of the 12,000 university students who are in attendance are dependent on some form of financial aid or scholarship. The rest of the students, 7,000 or so, do not attend due to lack of financial means. Don't you think the offer of free tuition is a better way for these students to stay in school?
This is why we are commending the president, Mr. Botti. We appreciate the step taken. However, it doesn't solve the issue of poor quality at the university. Infrastructure is poor, no access to internet connectivity. The University of Liberia is the only institution of higher learning in the entire Africa that does not have access to internet connectivity. We don't have buses. Our classes are not conducive for learning. So if you look at all of these problems, Mr. Botti, the first thing any president would like to do is to improve the quality of education at the University of Liberia. The administration of the university has said consistently, to produce quality at the university, we need $29 million. The government of President Weah has given $16.2 million, the same amount President Sirleaf was giving. There was no increment done during this fiscal year under President Weah, affecting the budget of the university. So we have a deficit of over $11 million. So who accounts for that? Who fills in the gap in order to produce quality?
I was surprised to learn at this time that the university registration system was not digitalized. The president mentioned in his speech that when he learned about this, his administration from the beginning put money into it. Now, I know that this year there was still a problem that this registration process was not moving fast enough. What's your comment?
Quite frankly, yes, the president spent some money, about $300,000. To digitize the system, but the system is not fully digitized. It is halfway digitized. For example, Mr. Botti, they have built an e-portal system. To operate a digitized system, you need internet access. The University of Liberia does not have internet access. That's number one. Number two, students cannot pay their tuition online. Remember, there are graduate students as well as undergraduate students. So we can only download our grade sheet for online and we can plan our courses. Those are the two things we can do on the e-portal system. Besides those two things, we cannot go further.
Mr. Colley, it's so nice to talk with you always again.
Thank you, Mr. Botti. My pleasure.
Martin Colley is Secretary General of the Student Unification Party at the University of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 25th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. We send shout out to all our affiliate stations around Africa on this Thursday morning. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The spokesman for Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, the EFCC, says the anti-corruption body is non-political and has no interest in the political affiliations of individuals. Wilson Uwajaren was reacting to a lawsuit accusing Adams Oshomole, the national chairman of the ruling All Progressives Congress, APC, of fraud. Asadalo Oche, an activist based in Edo State, has gone to court to challenge the failure of the AFCC to investigate Mr. Oshomole, but the EFCC did not honor an Abuja court summon to appear before it. The spokesman, Uja Warren, says the commission did not appear before the court because it did not receive any summons.
It's not possible for me to respond directly to the allegation now because the matter is already in court. What I'm aware is that the prosecutor is in court, and unfortunately, the commission was not served. And so when the matter came up October the 23rd, the EFCC was not presented in court. But I have issued a statement really to alert the public that we were not served with the processes, which is the reason why the commission did not send in representation. I'm very, very hopeful, and I'm sure that at the next adjournment, we are duly served, the commission will be fully represented in court.
But Wilson, is the commission aware of the suit against Mr. Oshomole? Are you aware of that?
If you are not served with the processes, there's no way you can be aware, which is the reason why we were not in court.
Mr. Osadadlo is asking the EFCC to investigate Mr. Oshomole. What about that?
Yes, he has the right under the Nigerian constitution to seek whatever release he wants from the law court. You know, we are a constitutional democracy, and the citizens have a right under the constitution to seek redress, whatever manner they think fit. Having said that, I also want to place it on record that when you submit a petition to the commission, it's not an automatic thing that once you submit a petition, that petition must be investigated and we must go public with our findings. No, we have an internal mechanism for evaluating every petition. Petitions are evaluated on merit, and if we believe that the petition has merit, then investigation takes place. And we don't do our investigation on the pages of the newspaper. We can be investigating a suspect for a year and we will not know that we are doing investigation. So if eventually the man who has gone to court actually submitted a petition to the commission, I think he has not given the commission the benefit of the doubt before going to the court.
You know, Wilson, I want you to answer this because there's a suspicion that because Mr. Oshomole is the chairman of the ruling APC, that perhaps the EFCC might want to cut him a slack.
You are the one that is taking the suspicion. Ours is a law enforcement organization. We are not a political party, and we are not interested in the political affiliation of individuals. What we do, we work with facts, and if we have evidence to go against any individual, regardless of the political party that you belong, the commission will go after you. So whether Mr. Oshomole is in APC or PDP has no meaning whatsoever to the commission.
So you are saying that the next time, if the EFCC is served notice from the court, that you will appear in court?
Absolutely. If we have served the processes, the commission has no reason not to appear in court.
Wilson, thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you.
It's my pleasure.
Wilson Uwajaren is a spokesman for Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission. He was speaking with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. The Burundian government has boycotted the East African Community Mediated Dialogue that was expected to kick off yesterday in Arusha, Tanzania. Instead, the government asked for a postponement of the talks until next month. But as Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura, the East African Community, which is facilitating the talks, has yet to meet the Burundian government's demand.
The East African Community-mediated dialogue is expected to resume today after being postponed by the facilitation team yesterday, citing the absence of key stakeholders, both the government and the ruling parties in the DFDD. The facilitation team, which is led by the former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, said that the suspension was to give time for the government to arrive and take part in the talks. Prosperi Nahoramie is the Burundi government spokesman. He says that the Burundi government asked for the list of participants and the list of issues on the agenda that will be talked about, but until now, they haven't received any answer. The government spokesman said that the Burundi government had made it clear that it will not dialogue with those accused of plotting the failed coup in 2015. According to the facilitation team, all stakeholders other than Burundi government and the ruling party CNDD-FDD were already in Arusha and ready for the fifth dialogue session, which is also believed to be the last round of talks. Agathon Rwasa is an opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the parliament.
It would be better that this session would be a conclusive one. There is a need urgently address the issues of political environment in Burundi so as to enable making up a kind of roadmap to 2020. We can boost our democracy if we accept each other. This Burundi needs the efforts of each and every citizen.
Since the regional mediated dialogue was launched in 2015, Burundi government had declined to dialogue with members under arrest warrant, a move that stalled the talks for the last 3 years. Nancy Ninette Mutoni is the spokesperson of the Burundi's ruling party, CNDD-FDD.
As long as the government of Burundi is not in the dialogue, there's no reason for us to be there. Whatever going to be discussed in Arusha will be implemented in Burundi under the leadership of the government of Burundi. So discussing or going to dialogue without the government of Burundi is not really a good idea for us. That's why we wait the facilitation team to respond to the government of Burundi.
The mediation team was expected to present the report to the East African Community Heads of State Summit in November, from which the summit would endorse and give guidance on the way forward. However, the session is most likely to be suspended due to the absence of the Burundi ruling party and the government. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
85-year-old Cameroon President Paul Biya, who won re-election to his seventh term in a landslide victory on Monday, now faces expectations by Cameroonian residents for improved living conditions as a growing secessionist movement threatens security in the country. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports.
Paul Biya was declared the winner of Cameroon's presidential elections Monday with 71% of the votes.
The candidate, Biya Paul.
Biya's victory, announced by Constitutional Council head Clement Atangana, comes amid claims from opposition candidates that the election was marred by fraud, including ballot stuffing and voter intimidation. But Biya's supporters are ecstatic.
Paul Biya is a guarantor of peace, success, prosperity, and living together. That's why we have chosen our president. Am I telling the truth? Am I telling the truth?
Other residents hope the incumbent will do more to unite the country.
We hope he'll be able to restore the cohabitation between our English-speaking and French-speaking brothers so that serenity and peace can still prevail in Cameroon.
Violence connected to a separatist movement in the Western Anglophone regions forced tens of thousands to flee in the lead-up to the vote, preventing many from casting ballots. Britain and the United States have urged President Biya to focus on resolving the causes of the violence in that part of the country. Most Cameroonians have only known one president, as Biya has been in power since 1982. Many say they expect a lot from him this time around.
We are just waiting for him to improve the living conditions of Cameroonians. We hope that with this last term, there will be a lot of change.
We especially want him to create jobs for the youth. Also, integrate young people into the formal and non-formal sectors.
Biya is Africa's second longest-serving president after Equatorial Guinea's Teodoro Obiang-Gemam Bosogo, who came to power in 1979. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
A group of Malawian activists is planning to seek a court injunction to prevent authorities from constructing a statue in honor of Mahatma Gandhi. The government says the proposed statue is in recognition of Gandhi's importance in the fight against colonialism in India and Africa. But organizers of the petition contend that Gandhi was a racist who does not deserve a national monument. Their views are backed by former Vice President Kasim Chilupa. But a local media report informed Information Minister Nicholas Dawsey as saying racial slurs allegedly made by Gandhi as a young man do not provide an accurate description of him.
We have been working with a lawyer to try to stop the government in erecting the statue for obvious reasons. And at the moment, we are really nearing the end, and soon probably we'll make an announcement that we'll file it at the court.
Some of your supporters who have been signing petitions against this erection of this statue to honor Gandhi are saying that you might not necessarily have time, since construction is going on earnest. It will be in the government interest to speed it up to construct the edifice. What is your response to that?
I think we are working as fast as we can, and we just have to make sure we're covering all corners so that, you know, we don't have this injunction thrown out of court. So as much as there is the time fact, we also have to make sure that we have a solid basis to get this work stopped.
Information Minister Nicholas Dawsey said one of your accusations that Gandhi was a racist is not true, and that he was a freedom fighter, and that his fight against colonialism, both in India and Africa as well, is a positive thing to emulate and to honor him in Blantyre or Malawi for that matter. How do you respond to that?
I think it's really absurd that the Minister Dawsey has said those words, because, I mean, there are a lot of publications out there, even his biographers who have touched up on this subject, that Gandhi indeed said these disparaging remarks about Africans. And indeed, his supporters would say, oh, when he grew up and he got wiser, he changed his views. But the problem with this, like everybody says, is where are those statements that Gandhi retracted what he had said? All these claims about him changing are made by other people, not him. But when you look at the claims that he made about Indians being superior to Africans, these were letters written by him. So, I mean, it's really absurd that the minister can really overlook that. He doesn't even touch up on that subject. He just says, I don't believe. How can you say that without any evidence?
Some supporters of the government are saying that opposition groups and civil society groups are saying there are no jobs for the unemployed youth. And then the erection of some of these edifices will create jobs for Malawians. So why are you kicking against the same jobs that will employ Malawians?
What kind of job is really going to change this country by building a statue of Mahatma Gandhi? What is really going to change? I mean, these people are building for like 2-3 weeks. After that, what then? I think it doesn't make any sense to say that we are really trying to stop development, because, I mean, the statue itself, when you look at it, it's a pitiful sight. I mean, it's something that you can't really be proud of to say we're giving jobs to people.
So let me ask you this. What is the status of the online petition you are gathering so far, and how soon will you present this to the authorities in the commercial capital, Blantyre?
I think at the moment we have over 3,500 signatures, and basically, I think we want to get this injunction filed, and then after that, because what is happening, there are a lot of people who don't know. They just think Mahatma Gandhi was this great man, and let me not take anything from me. He was great. He was great for India, but this is Africa. He said so many disparaging things, and so, you know, a lot of people have been bought by this leading narrative that he was great for the whole world. When he was in Africa, he was only fighting for Indian rights and not African rights.
Ngotama Katenga Kaunda is one of the organizers of the campaign against building a statue of Mahatma Gandhi. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotte from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Liberian President George Weah has announced free tuition for all undergraduate students at the University of Liberia and all other public universities in the country. And that is it for this Thursday, October 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I'm Lino Mudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will have an exclusive interview with Dr. Helena Dube, Namibian ophthalmologist notable for her charitable work among sufferers of eye-related illnesses in Namibia. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.